Tale of a spider and some triangles. Let me start with a quote. You can read it for yourselves, so I'm not going to read it to you. There are two key things there, I think, that are relevant to what I'm going to show you and what have driven me in terms of some of this work. One is the importance of interdependence, and you've heard that a lot this morning. We've talked about ecosystems. This is an eco event, so I hope you get the notion of interdependence. And secondly, the importance of human beings and actually what it means to be a human being. Why do we do the things that we do, and how do we interact with each other and with our environment? And as it says there, we belong in a bundle of life, and quite often that bundle's somewhat messy, unpredictable, and difficult to work out. This is what sort of really fascinated me, and I guess I was getting frustrated a little with the sort of public sector mentality that you can sometimes get, which is, I'll come back to that, which is life's very simple, and actually, you know, David is the director of People and OD. Can you just tell us in 11 months' time by what percentage you will have reduced sick absence? No, not got a clue. But we like to think, because it's more comforting, that life is that simple. So what I was keen to do was think about, is there a way where we can start to acknowledge the complexity and the messiness of what we're dealing with within our organisations and within our wider systems, and yet strip that back to make it simple enough in order to make some sense of it and to take action? So that's where this is coming from, really. And just a sort of note of caution, yes, I'm going to present a model. It's wrong. It's not reality. It's not the answer to everything. But it might be useful for some people in some circumstances, and that's what we found. But it's very much take it or leave it. So really quickly, because I've got to get the spider in now, I've set expectations. Just this notion of linearity, and we like to think that it is very much about cause and effect. Press button A, you'll get answer B. If you do this, that will happen over there. Anybody that's got teenagers as kids will know that actually that interaction is never one way. It is a two-way interaction, even if it's just grunting and sort of, you know, shuffling knuckles on the floor. But there's always an interaction. But the key thing there, of course, is that, you know, person B or person A also has an interdependent relationship with somebody else. Just so happens that they have an interdependent relation with somebody else. So there's a triangle, but we'll come back to the triangles. The point is that actually pull on any one of those corners and you pull the whole thing out of shape. And it's about recognising that interdependence. So if you think about your journey today, how many of those people did influence or could have influenced, A, the way that you felt, the way that you thought, maybe what you said, depending on the quality of their driving, and how you behaved? And similarly, how does that work the other way around? Life is full of interactions at every moment. And those interactions aren't as simple as a triangle, are they? You know, it gets more and more complicated. And you end up with the spider on the spider's web. So, and another way of looking at that is spaghetti bolognese, which is simply that, you know, the sum of the whole is greater than the sum of the parts, in that you can strip the spaghetti bolognese back to its constituent ingredients, but you taste those separately. That is not the taste of a spaghetti bolognese. It is how you put the things together. It's the connections that are so important. And so there we were going on thinking, this is 3 years ago, how do we acknowledge this messiness, this complexity, and make some sense of it? And we came up with that. Now, I will quickly talk you through it. I've talked about the triangles and that notion of it being the simplest shape where it shows interdependence with more than two things. Pull anyone out of shape, you pull the whole thing out of shape. Shaped like a tree for a couple of reasons. One is history is important, and you cut through a tree, you see its history. As organisations, as systems, we build and develop from our history, so let's not forget that. Secondly, that importance of moving from the external world to the internal world in terms of the trunk and the roots, really important actually for humans. And also trees are really good examples of ecosystems at different levels. So we didn't just make it up. It used to look different, didn't it, Jen? It looked rubbish. It doesn't look much better now, but it's a bit better. So let me just talk you through it really quickly. So the conundrum at the top in green. How do we address an ever-changing and increasing population health and care need in a way that we deliver the outcomes that we need to deliver to meet that need and maintain a certain quality of service? If we're going to do that, what capability do we need? Obviously, I'm going to come back to capability. That's a domain question at an individual, team, organisation or system level, and that's the basis on which we've used this model. So we've used it for individuals, we've used it for teams, for our own organisation, and now at a wider system level. We didn't make this up, just so you know. This is based on 3 years' worth of research, reading lots of King's Fund articles, innovation agency documents, the whole kit and caboodle, trying to find what we would call the key factors, which are the triangles, and the key facets, which are the corners, that impact on system capability. And then I've spent many, many sad hours sat in meetings, board meetings, and where else going, yep, got that, that's right. Doing it this morning. Have we got that in the model? So, and there's a lot of research behind it and a lot of theory. For those that are interested, again, Jen, human systems dynamics is in the left-hand, right-hand triangle. But there is a lot of theory behind it, but we're trying to be light to that. We're just trying to say there's more to it than meets the eye, but hopefully it's simple. Hopefully it's simple enough. Anyway, so that's the conundrum. How do we develop that capability? The starting point when we're thinking about health and care systems at whatever level for us is about relationships. Read the research, and anybody will tell you that it's about connecting human beings. I've got a definition from Charles Feltman, which I never get right, but it's effectively what he says is trust is about choosing to risk making what matters to you vulnerable to the actions of another person. I'll leave the question out there. Are we really at a place in our health and care systems at the moment that we are willing to choose to risk what matters to us and make it vulnerable to the actions of other people and other organisations? I'm not so sure yet. So that's what we're looking for in terms of the essence of our relationships, but how do we then get that? Well, first of all, we need a common purpose. And I don't mean the stuff that we would all espouse to, because you couldn't argue with it. I mean, on a day-to-day basis, do we have a common purpose that drives our behaviours? Or actually, at the moment, is it more around self and organisational protectionism, because that's what we're encouraged to do? So there's something about really getting to the heart of that. There's then something about being clear about contribution. So back to Jen's point around whose job is it to do what? And can we all be really clear on that, please? And difference is good, but let's just be clear how you bring that difference together into that relationship. And thirdly, connections. So is it face-to-face? Is it via technology of whatever form? What sort of language are we using? Are we able to understand what we're saying to each other? It's about giving thought to all of those three things. That's the foundation for this work. If we don't have trust in a human system, we're going nowhere. So that's why we always start with that. Onto the capability factor. I know I'm flying in the face sometimes of what is often heard, which is you need capacity and capability. Our view after these years of research is you are only capable if you have the right mix of capacity, competence and confidence. Now, capacity can be numbers, and you know, Karen this morning talked about it's got to be more than just a numbers game. Numbers are important, but often it's about time. So have our staff got the time to spend with people to deliver person-centred care? Have you built into your role time to do what is most important, that will make the most of the competence that that person has got? Possibly yes, possibly no. Competence, I'll come back to. Confidence, really, really important. Look at any England sporting team you'd like to think about. We could have a debate about whether they have the same level of competence as some opponents, but generally speaking, the thing that makes the difference is confidence all the time. Really important as a patient. Jen again talked about feeling safe. Well, that's critically important. How do we enable people to feel safe and confident to bring their competence to bear? And I think it's worth saying at this point, when I'm talking about capability, I'm not just talking about workforce. In fact, don't really use that phrase anymore. I'm talking about capability within the system. So first and foremost, what capability, what capacity, competence and confidence do we need to build within patients? And then service, then carers and their families, and then the wider community, and then care service providers. We have to look at it as a whole. We can't just decide we're going to do this bit in our bit of the world in terms of being service providers and assume that patients will just be capable to do what we need them to do. No, we need to think about that as well. So that's that. The third bit, competence, heard about that a lot this morning. Importance of understanding knowledge and skills. So you start with what mix of knowledge and skills and behaviours do we need in order to deliver this care? Don't start with roles, start with the mix. A good example of the behaviour element of that that's so important is when my mum was in hospital. She was getting, I would say, consistent care in terms of the knowledge and skills of the nurses that looked after her. But the variable was the behaviours. And those nurses, or that nurse in particular, whose behaviour was not helpful, who didn't build any sense of trust, who didn't connect with my mum, who didn't listen, my mum's well-being and health went downhill, actually, and that was a result of behaviour. So it has to be all three. But behaviours, really, really, really important. We need to think about where they come from. Well, they come from, you know, that mix of the physical, the mental, the cognitive bit, and the emotional bit. We are ultimately emotional beings, first and foremost. And sitting beneath that is values and beliefs. So what matters to people? What really matters to people? What is it that they need? What is it that they love the most? Because that's often what drives those behaviours at an unconscious level. So what we're finding in the system is we don't necessarily have all the relationships that we want and a level of trust. Well, why is that? It's because at a very deep level, those individuals are being threatened and they may not know it. We're asking people to collaborate and to risk their career, their status, their livelihood, their way of viewing the world. And we need to find a way of actually getting that out on the table and saying, as a person who's being asked to change this system, how does this make you feel, honestly? And can we have an honest conversation about that? Let's look at why you react in an emotional way, and that then leads to behaviours that leads to an unhelpful relationship. So how do we deal with that? But let's not assume that people are just badly behaved. They behave in a way that's in line with their values and beliefs and what drives them, often at an unconscious level. So that's that element of it. That's the key bit for me. It's that sort of branch, trunk, roots bit. That's the human element, the internal, the external bit. But the other bits are really important. So the bit on the left, environment, accommodation, critically important. Where you seat people, whether you give people the opportunity to interact is important. Do you give your staff the opportunity to go and sit somewhere to have their lunch? If not, what message does that send about what you think about them? Information, we've heard a lot about that today. So how do you access information in order to make informed choices and bring your knowledge and skills to bear? And equally, how can you capture that information in real time and in a way that doesn't actually constrain capacity? So can we stop, for example, people working out in the community who, when they want to update the system, because they can't get a mobile signal on their device, have to go back to base, then have to queue up because there aren't enough desktops? You know, that's a real story. Well, how much capacity are we wasting? Not just that. Actually, from a sort of thoughts, emotional level, those staff feel, well, you don't really care. And actually, my deep beliefs here about delivering great care, and I'm not able to do that because you're constraining my capacity and I can't bring my competence to bear. And then equipment. Again, that could be the IT, the hardware, but it can also be things like, do you have access to vehicles? Do you have access to medical equipment? All of those things are really important, and I would say that's directly relevant to what you've heard this morning, but we need to think about that and how it interacts with knowledge, skills, behaviours, and what drives those behaviours at that deep level. And then on the other side, which is the place that we love to start, isn't it? Let's just do a restructure. Let's change the org design. Well, no, let's do it, but not at the beginning. Let's think about these things first. Let's think about the capability we need and where it best fits. Then we can work out what mix of knowledge and skills and behaviours we need in our own organisation. Then we can think about how we design the job or the role. Do it at that point, not at the beginning. Then think about, well, how do you fit those together in a structure that's helpful? And then think about policy and process, and to what extent does that help or hinder the way that we do things? So again, some of our district nurses would say, your policy around actually preventing abuse of us doesn't really feel like that protects us. So I've lost my confidence as an individual, as an organisation. That's not right. So that's how it fits together. How do we use it? Well, as I say, you can use it at an individual level for people in terms of coaching and mentoring. You can certainly use it at a team level for visioning. But where we're really interested, actually, is at an organisational and at a system level, particularly care community level, around saying, what's the need? What's the model of care, which is the quality and the outcomes? Well, what capability do we need? Then we've got to ask ourselves, if we look at all these factors and facets, what's helping and what's hindering? Where do we focus our attention now? what difference would make the biggest difference? And let's start there. And then you can use a PDSA cycle or whatever you want to go around that loop and then say, well, now what's it looking like? How's the capability changed? How have the outcomes changed? How are we meeting need? What's the quality of service? So, because I didn't start my watch, I think I'm all right for a couple of minutes. I want to give you just a brief sort of example of that. I could give you loads, but if I think about... Well, my mum and I guess, basically. So the story, in short, is that my mum, not that long, lost my dad and then her sister within 2 months of each other. Since then has got progressively worse from a physical health point of view, but also from a mental health point of view, and has now got dementia. At the same time, me as her carer... is also a patient because I've got chronic fatigue. I am also a member of staff and I work for the NHS. So there's a dynamic straight off. So what's gone on there? Well, if I look at the relationships bit, I think I've got a common purpose with my mum about what we're trying to achieve for her. But I wouldn't necessarily say that the myriad of clinicians that we've met with have got that same common purpose at all. Similarly for myself, I know I want to recover from chronic fatigue, but most of the clinicians I've met don't really see that as an option and see it as, well, we'll just manage your symptoms. Also, with a lot of those people, the connections have been, quite honestly, really shocking because people have just spotted the symptom and gone for that. They have not listened. Where we found fantastic care for my mum and for me is where the clinician put all their expertise aside and said, tell me your story and let me listen. And they connected and they built some trust, which meant that my mum and me actually opened up. And then there's something around, well, what is it that my mum needs to be able to do for herself? What's her contribution? What's my contribution as the carer? And what's the contribution of the community and friends? And what's the contribution of the clinicians? That's far from clear at the moment, and we'll come back to that. So then if we go on to the capacity, confidence, competence bit, my mum's got all the time in the world, so that's not an issue. It's a real problem for me because she lives in Lancaster and I live in Chester and I've got a very busy day job. And worse for me is that my time is being constrained by the bottom triangle, by my physical health. So, but she doesn't have an issue with time, but where she does have an issue is in confidence. Because she has never run a household. She doesn't have the knowledge to know how to do it. She doesn't have the skills to do it because she's lost her support network. And equally, in terms of managing her own illness, she doesn't understand it. She's finding it very difficult to get the knowledge that she needs in order to manage it herself. So her confidence has significantly dipped. So in terms of then what's that done for her? Well, that's gone right down to the root and she started to become more depressed. What does that do? That means that the thing that she loves, which is her garden more than anything else, she doesn't have the wherewithal to actually do anything in the garden. So now she starts to get into that cycle. Physically then she's not going out, which doesn't help her dementia. So all that's going on for her. For me, obviously I react to that in a very emotional level. At the same time, I want to spend more capacity of my capacity supporting her, but can't because my capacity in the day job is getting squeezed. So that becomes a challenge for me to support her. The environment would be fab if we could give her some equipment. I'd long to be able to do more with her on the internet, but quite frankly, she doesn't have the knowledge or the skills or the confidence to do it, and she's so far gone now that she can't understand it. So we need to look at alternatives for doing that, and actually what we've decided in terms of that element is we need to change the accommodation, because if we change the accommodation and move it nearer to us, that helps us reconnect. So that's what we're doing with that. But trying to get information about her various illnesses is very difficult. I then have the issue around trying to deal with chronic fatigue in the NHS, which is the whole of the story about trying to get information about that. So what do we do there? Well, the other bit we need to look at is in terms of job design and policy and process. So trying to tap into whose job is it to do what is very, very difficult, very difficult. And the classic case of policy and process, which I think is going wrong, is she was told she needed a CT scan. So the policy, which is very helpful, was somebody just needs to ring her up and tell her to come in for a CT scan. So she's coming in for a CT scan to see what sort of dementia she's got, and somebody rings her up out of the blue and says, can you turn up on Saturday? Well, lo and behold, you know, she wasn't ready on Saturday because A, she didn't remember, and B, she didn't even know what they were talking about. That requires capability outside of my mum, I primarily, you know, me, to support her to get to that. And we're not thinking about that. So All of those things are conspiring to mean that actually the outcome that we're looking for with my mum is proving very difficult to achieve. But what are the positives? Well, the key thing that I haven't mentioned in all of this is that there is a third party in this, which is my sister, who brings extra capacity to the whole situation. And in terms of, I'd say, her physical and mental robustness is more robust than me at the moment, and her trousers fit properly. So she's added capacity to this, which has made a massive difference. She's also had more time to gather more information. We get more information into the situation. We then feel more able to deal with the situation. We then become more knowledgeable and skilled. And ultimately, all three of us become more confident in how we can actually meet the outcome for my mum. And then I guess the only other thing to say is back to the relationships bit. So, you know, if we didn't have that relationship and my mum didn't have relationships with people around her, where would she be? She would have a relationship with the odd clinician who's been fantastic, but others that treat her just like a symptom, not as a human being. And I think the other thing that we've learned, which is so important, is connecting into a network of people who can share their capability, their knowledge, skills, and their behaviours and their emotional journey, which is really, really important. So I think there's something crucial about how do we network our own people, who are both often patients, carers and members of staff, into those networks where they can get that support and they can address all of these. So that's where it's up to. We are actually doing, believe it or not, some detailed academic credible research to take it forwards. Because we know there's some merit in this, but there's work to do. So happy to talk to people about how we might partner, or you want to talk further. So I'm done.